Welcome back. So in our last module, we showed you how to get the inventory system up and running. We showed how to display it and everything. And I made the comment of what's the point of having an inventory if they've got nothing in it, right?
That's right.
So I guess our next step is to set up interacting with NPCs, which will lead us to building our NPC store and eventually getting us stuff inside of our...
That's right. We're gonna start with some interactions, some easier interactions to pull off that every RPG has, and then we'll work towards that more in-depth interaction and maybe, you know, get some items out of...
Well, you said, like, I like the comment there, you said that, you know, every RPG needs some sort of level of interaction, right? And there's a varying difference between the levels of interaction. So, you know, the ones that pop into my mind, obviously, are the store that we're going to be taking a look at, and, you know, the greeter, if you will, the person that says hello or hi or has a little thing. Is there anything else that you could think of that would be an NPC interaction that would be...
Oh, tons. I mean, you have your quest givers and so on as well. You have your sort of informal shopkeepers where they're not, you know, they don't have a wide range of things, but you can get one thing from them in an interaction. Sometimes healers are done this way. You just sort of go up to them and they're just like, hey, you need healing? And you just, yes. And it just gives you some hit points. You give them some money or herbs or whatever they need and you walk away. So you have your varying levels of degrees of interaction and then you have all that. Even small things, sometimes I can think of RPGs where you wander up and you just like nudge a critter or something and then it gets all mad and it flutters off or something, right? I mean, that's an interaction as well. You still have that level of interaction with them. You know, a sword stuck in a stone, you can go up and interact with that.
It's not, and it's still considered an NPC.
It's an interaction. I mean, if you call it a non-player character or whatever.
At that point, you're really splitting hairs.
If it's a magical singing sword that talks to you and everything, then hey, maybe it is a character, right? They don't know until they go to interact with it. But it's adding that level of interaction that we're really looking at here. And again, it's going to work with that system of what are we facing? What's in front of us? Is there something to interact with? And then now, what do we do with it, and how do we show that off? That's what we're really going to dig into.
And I think, like, NPCs, it's a really important part of the RPG genre, right?
Like, absolutely.
Having those NPCs and having good interactions with them is, like, what really builds out the world, right? At the end of the day, you want to have someone drawn into the world. You want to have really strong interactions with them.
That's right. Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is a key cornerstone of most role-playing games. You're supposed to feel like you're in this role, not just rolling dice. That's another kind of RPG, right?
Yes.
There are those people who are min-maxers, we call them. They're stat hungry. All they care about is the best build tree and that. I mean, there's a time and a place for that, and there's games for that for sure. Those are ROLL players. They're role players. They like rolling the dice. And then we have the ones that like to be in the moment, be in the story, be the
live
character, live that life, do what they think or what they imagine their character should do. Should he be an upstanding citizen? Should he become that evil villain and so on eventually and you know, pull the wool over everybody's eyes and do all that? And that you only get to enact that vision with interacting with other NPCs. So sometimes they respond to you, they respond to what you're wearing, they respond to what you've done, other quests you've done. And that goes into why this is important is we can expand this in so many ways. We can add reputation systems from now these simple interactions. So depending on what you've done in the game, other characters will or will not sell things to you. They will or will not talk to you. And it's as simple as a if statement of whether or not you've completed this thing or done this one bad action to whether or not they actually do their normal behavior.
You see a lot more of the role-playing games that are coming out in, you know, the AAA titles and stuff like that. Yep. They're implementing reputation because it seems to broaden the game a little bit more. You have to think about your interactions with it, not just, you know,
provides consequence to every action is the idea for it. And to some degree that's great, and a lot of developers do that, and there are some developers that do that really well. And at the same time, there are people within the industry that don't want developers to go down that road. And the reason is because whenever you build that kind of content, you really have to be careful because you can spend a lot of time building content that nobody's ever going to play or experience, right? Because every time you make a decision, if
the
decision is a consequence, it splits and you've pruned off most of those anything down that path, unless, of course, it crosses over in some other way and so on. And then some players don't like that, the fact that really your consequences don't matter because from anywhere you can get to anywhere else, and then they feel like there's no consequence. So it's a balance between making critical decisions that matter, but at the same time, not having to build 20 times the content where people are only going to see a thin slice, because then you've really wasted a lot of work and a lot of time.
So if you're going to implement something like that, basically the best advice is plan it out, run it through, maybe even do it on pen and paper and see how that plays out.
Right? That's a great way. I always talk about that. Paper prototyping your games before you do anything. If it's not fun playing it, it's not going to be fun when you put pretty pictures to it.
Exactly.
Right? That's basically the mantra you got to think about. And you can take all kinds of games, break them down into paper prototype and play them. RPG games are real easy. Mm-hmm. It's basically just pick up a copy of any role-playing pen and paper game out there and go, but then put your mechanics in it. Like, once you understand how it works, put your mechanics in it, play it out. Is it fun still? If it's not, is it because of your mechanics or you just don't enjoy that kind of a game? I mean, it's possible. And every kind of game can be broken down into that kind of stuff. Some large MMOs are broken down for the balancing of the multiplayer mechanics of this class versus that class. They'll be broken down into a card game because MMOs generally revolve on timers of actions mm-hmm. and when you can cast a spell or an ability, and you have to wait a certain number of seconds. So you just make a phase time system and you just play your card when you want to do your ability and you play it against other characters with those abilities. It allows you to balance your mechanics and see if one class is good at a certain role and what other classes are good at. And again, all of that can translate into your design for your RPG game so that these interactions are meaningful. It shouldn't just feel like it's a throwaway or it's something you do to every single...
Or just tacked on, right? You don't want that feeling.
You want that, it matters. And at the same time, you want to make sure that not every decision is a hard stop kind of decision. That's not what you want. You want them to be able to act the way their character wants to act, or they want their character to act and say the funny lines or the very, gruff lines or whatever you want for the attitude. But at the same time, there should be key moments that make decisions that matter. Maybe you get an item that, you wouldn't get. Getting an item that doesn't completely change the game is good. I made a decision and I got these because that fits my playstyle. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's no lost content. I mean, I can probably find that other item in some store later on or from some random drop or something and try it out later if I wanted to. So that's a kind of decision that is good. It feels meaningful to the player because they had an interaction with an NPC. He was like, do you want this or this? And they're bartering over it or whatever, and he gets the one he wants. He feels accomplished. He gets to use that item for his playstyle, but he didn't lose any content because that NPC still has it. He could go steal it back later maybe or whatever, or come back and trade it with him. Like, no, this
isn't
my thing.
That's a bad consequence, though.
Yeah, I mean, bad consequences when you get caught. So those are the kinds of interactions we're talking about.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's a great look at why NPCs are so important in role-playing games, right?
Yep.
So with that said, let's actually take a look at how we're going to implement some interactions.
Okay, yep.
So in this module, I know we were talking a little bit there, but in this module, we're going to show you how to interact with NPCs. We're going to start with the lower level interactions, the very light interactions.
Yep.
And then we're going to work our way up to actually building an NPC shop.
Right.
Which is what I'm looking forward to because I want to get some items in my inventory.
Right. And before the shop, we are going to have to discuss enchant scene stack as well still. Yes, because we're going to layer the shop as a new scene on top of the main world's scene. And this would be the same thing that you would do to use your title screen or your pause menu on top of the game and so on. We're going to show that process and sort of how it works. And it works like every other stack, but we're going to give some visual aids and go over it a little bit more so that everybody's got a clear understanding of how that works, because it is an important part.
It is a very important
of the system.
Part,
yes.
Especially with enchant, definitely.
That's right.
Okay, so I know that last week, we discussed how we set up the, are we facing a tile? Are we looking at a blank tile? Are we facing someone? I know we went through that, but I thought, let's take a few minutes. Let's walk back through it just quickly.
Okay.
And kind of describe what we did here.
All right. That's fine. So the first thing we did was we described the tile that the player was currently on. And that was easy enough. We basically looked at the player's position. And it's in a pixel position, so we had to divide it by the width of our tiles to figure out what tile he was on, and then we simply checked our map data for what tile value was stored in our map data, and that tells us what tile we were on. We then would also need to describe where the player is looking. So now we know where the player is. We can also know what kind of tile he's on. We can also look in front of the player, whichever direction that may be. And we just did a simple if-else setup to say if he's looking, you know, forward, it's one this way, minus one in Y. If he's looking up the screen, up the screen's minus one in Y, down the screen it was plus one in Y, to the right was plus one in X, to the left was plus minus one in X, and that would give us the type of tile that he's facing.
And let us know
direction.
If he's looking at something, like if he's going to be talking to a tree, is he going to be talking to a player, is he staring off into the void?
And we needed to know that to pop up the status window, because we only want the status window to appear when he's not trying to interact with somebody. Mm-hmm. So we basically built in all of the interaction system already. Previously, but now we want the results of when he tries to interact with a given character. So we're not going to go back over all of that code because we already covered that, and you can go grab it from an earlier session. So now we're going to look at sort of what the results are of the player trying to interact with one of our other characters that we've dropped in the game.
Okay, makes sense. So I guess the easiest place to start would be just building what I defined earlier as the greeter NPC.
Right, that's your basic guy. He just says hi or welcome or, you know, why are you lost in the woods?
Yeah, like a guard walking down the city street, right? And
exactly.
You say hello and he's like, good day, sir.
Yes, right? that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
So we can pop over to the code here. And the first thing we're going to do is name an object NPC.
Okay.
So we set up a variable, we call it NPC, we set it equal to basically this. It's going to have a property called say.
Okay.
And that property is a function that is going to take a message as a parameter because we don't know what he wants to say yet, and we want to make this general again.
So we want to be able to reuse this as much as possible.
Exactly. This isn't just NPC number one, and then we're going to have NPC number two and NPC number three. We want just an NPC, that object that can handle any message situation. That's what we're looking at building here. So we've set this up so that it has a defined height for the status label.
So that status label is the same label that we've been using for our inventory, for our status screen.
It was last set to zero whenever we got rid of it and nulled out the message. So now we're just going to set it to a smaller text box sized kind of pop-up, 12, and then fill in whatever message was passed in as a parameter into the status label's text. And enchant automatically displays the status box because it has both a height and a valid
message. We've already built the display for the status label. And now we're just tacking into that by saying, okay, now we're just going to say the NPC, we're going to pass in a message, and it's just going to display that message in the already existing status.
Correct. Now, as far as a greeter goes, okay, a greeter is really just an NPC that's going to say hello to us.
Make them say hello, MVA crowd.
Hello, MVA crowd. On the fly coding. Always good. And it, of course, tests my spelling. we'll make it a.
There we go.
And you know what? Because we
excited.
Have excitement here. There we go. So, hello, MVA crowd. That's what we're looking for from our NPC greeter. So, all we had to do was basically the greeter's action. That's the only property it has. And it's going to be a simple function call that tells the NPC object to say, hello, MVA crowd.
Okay, cool. So I'm basically going to say greeter.action, and when I say that, it's going to automatically display
the text. Right, we could use it that way, just like we did NPC.say.
Yeah.
Now, we're not going to do it exactly that way.
Okay.
Because what we're going to do is we're going to actually make our code generic so that any NPC we're interacting fires his action.
I like that.
Okay, so I'm just going to pop down here. Here's a cat. He also has an action. I'm not going to show it yet, but he has an action that is some other function. Mm-hmm. So now if I make a cat or I make a greeter, what I want is any code that I run on any NPC, basically, and I tell it to do its action, it will do its own thing independently. So I don't want to just be littering the code with greeter one, you know, greeter dot whatever all the
okay,
time.
Okay, so if we're doing that, I'm guessing we're going to need more than one role for these.
Right, we're going to need more than one role, and that's where, again, if you were around here the other day, or the other week there, we saw our little roles array, which, of course, I just have to find it. Actually, it's going to be easier if I just search for it.
And again, your
quick find.
Your
role.
Control F isn't working for
That's
you.
That's right. Because I've got it set up for my zoom ability.
Oh, okay.
So, sprite roles. That was the array we mentioned. And you can see that I've put an array with either nothing for a bunch of spots or Cat, Greeter, and Brawler, which we haven't got to yet, but there he's peeking right there.
So that array is actually matching to our sprite sheet.
Right, so this is matching to our sprite sheet. So the Greeter, 0, 1, 2.
Okay,
so if we go pop over to our little sprite sheet over here, sprites.png, 0, 1, 2. So the guy with the cow lick that sort of looks like me today, that is going to be our Greeter in the world. Okay, so that is really what we're setting up in terms of our roles. Now that we have our sprite roles, when do we need to know that information? We need to know that information when the player tries to interact and is facing that icon.
So when the person's trying to either bring up their status screen, if they're looking at someone, correct, instead of loading the status screen, we're going to load our interaction.
So I'm going to use my the keyboard example, and then I'll pop up to the other example, the on touch example. So again, if the A button is pressed, and by A button we mean space bar because there's that abstract layer in between there. So player facing, we figure out which way we're facing. And this is gonna trigger the else if we happen to be facing the or somebody who has a role. So all we do is we find out the tile that you are facing, and we pass that in as an index to our sprite roles array. And basically, if this was 3, or 2, so 0, 1, 2, I already forget the order.
Yep, 0, you're
1,
right.
2, yeah, there we go, okay, perfect. So 0, 1, 2, so if this came back as 2 from our facing, then we would end up going to sprite roles 2, and sprite roles 2 had a value, which was greeter, so it's not empty, which is basically what we're checking. Mm-hmm. So this if doesn't fire, instead the else does, and here's how we make our code generic. Instead of simply saying greeter.action, because then that would only work for greeter, mm-hmm, we say sprite roles, the thing I'm facing, tell it to do its action. So it ends up that JavaScript swaps this out for whatever was in this array, which was greeter.action.
Oh, I like that. That makes our code a lot more reusable.
Okay, so if we happen to find a cat and we tried to interact with the cat, it would do our cat action, whatever that was. All right, so again, and if I say go to definition, the code doesn't know where to go because there's lots of people that have an action and can evaluate this. But we know what it is, and our cat has an action, our greeter has an action, and in the future, our brawler will also have an action. So this will cause our greeter to say, hello, MVA crowd.
Well, why don't you show us how you did that with the touch, and then we'll take a look at how
it
actually works.
All right, so, and again, got to go this way. So we look up our touch. There's our on touch start. And again, it's pretty much exactly the same code, except we're triggering it on the touch start instead of on the spacebar press.
Makes sense.
We look at which way the player's facing, and we find out that, he's facing a sprite that has a role, so we end up doing this part down here instead, which is whatever that guy's action is.
Very cool. Let's see it in action.
All right. We'll do it in the emulator this time, since it's open. There we go. So we got our guy. He can move around again. We're all happy. There's our little guy down here. And as long as I'm facing him, mm-hmm, okay, and he does have collisions, that's great. I can't walk through him. I can push A, and up at the top, it pops out, hello, MVA crowd. And if I walk away, the message goes away. So it's
very
using
nice.
That same, and of course, if I'm not facing him,
we
it shows our status. So we haven't always test those edge cases.
Yep.
We are using that status message again, so let's make sure it still does what it used to do. So, it works from all sides. We should test that. If I'm looking up at him, hello, MVA crowd, no problem. And I go up here and I look this way at him, and we're good there. And our final test, and there it is. So everybody's, greeting us over and over again. We feel special.
He's a friendly fella.
And there we go. So now we got our bestest bud.
All right, that's awesome. So now that we have our greeter,
yep,
we want to start moving towards building our shop.
Okay.
But you were mentioning earlier that we had to deal with multiple scenes.
Right, we do have to deal with multiple scenes. In the way we're going to implement a shop, there's different ways to do it, but we're basically just going to overlay the shop over the game.
Okay, great. So let's take a look at how the stack works.
Okay, so on our slides here, we got a couple of images just to illustrate that. So we're going to create an NPC merchant, okay, and we're going to have to define a new role for him and mm-hmm. do all that fancy stuff, just like we did to the greeter. But this one, instead of saying simply hi or hello MVA crowd, his action is going to be to create a new scene and push it onto the scene stack in Enchant. So you could use this same idea for any menu system at all. So even your base game, we didn't include a startup menu with a new game option or a pause menu yet or anything like that. But all of this would be the same way to do that. So you have a scene stack, you have your root scene, as you can see on the leftmost image at the top there. So your game would fire off a root scene, and perhaps you overlaid that with your initial game screen. And in our case, it's our actual game, the world that we put there. And if we push a new scene on using that push and pop command, so we're using the push, we hand it a new scene, such as the options menu. Mm. That scene would overlay our new scene, so it goes in front basically, and the new scene is on the stack, but it's no longer being updated or drawn or anything like that. Only
it's not active.
Right. Only the active one, the one on the top, which we could also refer to at any point in time by saying dot current scene, game dot current scene.
And that's why we were doing that with the other.
Exactly. We were doing that with our other code so that we don't have that problem of trying to figure out which scene we're on. It'll just always work on the current scene. So you could do your options menu, and then when you hit, you know, return to game, that return to game button could simply say pop current scene, and that would pop it off the stack, and we'd get back to the one underneath, which would be our game world again.
Well, because you explained it like you explained last week, was you can think of the stack as a plate of dishes, or a stack of dishes, right?
Right.
As you put one on, and then you put the next one on, it's going to push it down, and as you take them off, it's going to bubble them back up.
Right, pop them back up. Yeah. And that's basically where that terminology came from. Maybe somebody ate at, you know, those...
Yeah, had
those
a stack of plates
all there, all-you-can-eat restaurants or something, and they've been playing around with those push and pop stacks all day long.
Yeah.
Or at the convenience store, you know, you can pull out all those cups and they all just shoot out.
Shoot out, yes.
So it's that kind of mentality, but we're doing it with the scenes. And only the topmost scene is going to be active at any given time. That it's updating, it's drawing, it's playing around in that way. And if we pop another scene on, it just goes inactive, and we continue to play with the next scene. And that's what Enchant has built into their system to handle a scene stack, basically.
That's really cool. It's a good system, right? It's a system that you would probably employ on a lot of different...
Generally, we would have had to write it ourselves
exactly.
So that we have it, but now it's all in Enchant for us, so we can
Enchant to the rescue.
That's right, exactly.
Awesome. So now that we know what our stacks are, we know how we want to create these new scenes, I guess we should move on to setting up this new NPC character.
Okay.
So that we can actually get
set up and going.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I just have to zip through some code here, and we're going to initialize that character. We're going to get him up. We're going to set his action up, and we're going to put it in the role array and so on. And then from that point, we will also still have to initialize our shop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to have to add things like a set shopping function, like we did with our set stage function, and we did with our other initializations like set player, so that it builds all the assets and gets all the images if we need any new ones. In this case, we don't need any new images at all because we already loaded all the items.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only going to display the shopkeeper, which he's already loaded because he's in the world, and then the player and some text. So we don't actually have to preload any new images for this interaction, but you could. And again, that means you had to have preloaded them so that they're in the game.assets array so that you could then pull them out and draw them. But we've already got all the images we need, so we don't have to do much of that at all. All we have to do is jump into our code.
Well, I was going to say, like, we need to add event handlers as well, right?
Yep, we will need to add new event handlers, but that's going to be to our new scene, and we'll see that in a second. So let's just first just go down to set shop, or set shopping, I guess is what I called it. There we go. And again, the shop is going to be set up similarly to our main game scene. We make a group, okay, and we're going to have to add things like the amount of funds the player has. We're going to need to know that. So we actually dig that out of the player's gold piece stat.
Makes sense.
And we're going to want to display it too. So we made a little shopping funds function that just returns a string saying gold, colon, however much you have. And we're going to use that to be shown to the screen, sort of like our status. We're also going to have to draw the shopkeeper. Okay, and because this is a different scene again, and we're going to put them in a new group, we're going to treat him as if he's a brand new sprite. Because basically the game world went inactive underneath the shop. So we load them in at whatever size it should be. We set up his image by drawing from our game.assets, our sprites PNG. That's where the cat is, happens to be our shopkeeper. That's where he's hiding, what frame he's on. He doesn't have any animations, so we don't have to worry about some of the other functionality that we put into the player's image in this case. We pick a position, X and Y, and we are scaling him up to 2x size also when he's in the shop, so he looks a little bigger, a little bit easier to see, a little more personal. And we now add him as a child to the to this, which is the shop, which is a group, just like the previous.
So it's kind of like how we set up our stage. We set our stage up as a group. We were adding things to our stage group.
Right.
This way, we're just setting up a shop, which is technically like having another stage or another scene, if you will, and we're going to reinitialize it that way and, and add everything as a child to that.
Exactly. Scene. And then as you're getting back to saying, like in the slides there, we have to add new event handlers to this scene because, again, the game world had all of our other listen for button presses, and it's now inactive. So it doesn't do any of that. We need something else to listen for that. And so down here, I'm just going to drop out this for now. And we have our whenever the enter frame goes off for this scene, so every time it gets updated or drawn, we're going to have to do a couple of things. One is check for that keyboard input. Okay, so just game input A, and that's basically if you hit the space bar, the player is trying to indicate he would like to buy something. So that's what we're listening for. However, up, down, left, and right, and so on, has a little bit of a different meaning in our shop. First of which, down we've decided he's basically saying, I'm done, and trying to walk out of the shop.
So it's like if you walked into a store and you were facing the counter, behind you is going to be the door. So if you press down, you're walking out the door.
Right. So we decided down was going to be our walk away from the shopkeeper. No, I don't want any of this. And get out the door. So we've done that in our code, else if game.input.down. And basically when we do that, we want the shop to display a message of farewell. So we have a variable where we can put our farewell message in there. And then we want that to happen, but after a certain amount of time is when we want the shop to actually disappear and pop the scene.
So we're basically going to pause everything for a
right. So a we have to do a set timeout, okay, which is, again, a function in JavaScript. And you can specify the function you want it to call when this amount of time runs out.
And is that in milliseconds?
That's in milliseconds, yeah. Otherwise, we'd be here for a very long
time.
Waiting
for that
thousand,
to happen.
1,000 seconds or minutes or something to roll by. So yeah, that's in milliseconds. So 1,000 milliseconds is going to go by, which basically a second. And then we're going to pop our scene off, so the shop disappears. And we set our shop message text back to our greeting so that the shop is ready to greet you next time
you come in.
So we're just doing some resetting.
And the reason we're waiting is because if we don't wait, that farewell message is going to pop off the screen like that. You won't even see it.
Exactly. We wouldn't have time. The player pushed down, and he wouldn't have time to really, he'd see something flicker as if it changed, and then everything would just disappear.
So if you have a longer message, something more than just farewell, if you had like farewell player, or, you know, safe travels, and it kept going, you might want to delay that a little bit longer than a second because you want to give the person enough time to read the text on the screen.
Exactly. Or in a lot of games, they'll require a button press.
Yeah.
So when you push down, like A to leave would show up or something.
We've talked about that, though. Most people don't read what they
so
see.
They
just hit the button
hit stuff.
Yeah.
And
so maybe a pause is better there.
Yeah, I like the pause. It works out well. So then left and right is also the last two inputs we have to worry about. And left and right we're going to use as selecting what the player wants to buy. So what we do is we have an item selected variable, and what we're doing is we're just going to increment it one way or the other based on the player pushing left or right. And what we have to keep in mind is that eventually he's going to push so far that he gets to the end of the list. Okay, so basically the item selected, we're just setting it equal to the item selected modded by the length of the number of items in the shop. So that way if he tries to go one more over, and you divide that number, it actually ends up being an even number, so it goes back to the being zero, which is the first item or whatever.
It gives us that screen wrap effect.
That's right. It gives you a screen wrap effect by just simply doing a little bit of using the mod command without actually having to do any if checks or so on, seeing if he's to the left or if he's to the right. You don't have to do any of that if.
It's a lot less code to do it this way.
We're just abusing math to do some magic, okay? Math and magic.
It's about time we got to abuse math.
That's right. Math and magic. So that's what we've got going on here. And then in terms of where to put the item selector, because he's pushing left and right, we have to calculate the item selector. In this case, the item selector is the player. So when he pushes left and right, he just shunts in front of the item he wants so that you can see which item he's going to sort of grab. So we have to move him. Now, he was passed in to a variable called item selector when we set up the shop, and I didn't point that out explicitly. So that's really who item selector actually is the same variable as our player at the moment. So when we change his X value, it's going to move him in this scene.
And if you didn't want to use a player, maybe you wanted to use an indicator or like an arrow or something, you could just swap out whatever's passed into item select.
Right, you could just put any other image in there, like a hand or something like that if you wish, and then move that image around. Of course, you'd have to preload it or put it in your sprite sheet or something like that. So to move it, all we do is take our initial offset, whatever it happens to be, and then multiply however much space is in between each item so that the guy lines up. So we, of course, measured the pixels to be able to do that. It turns out it's 70, so 70 times whatever item you're trying to select is what you should add to 30 to get you to line up with the item.
Now, I'm a strong believer in don't hardcore code things. We did this because we knew the values.
Well, that was, again, code that was already there for it, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so if you were to change the size of your images or something, or change the items,
all of that would be
all of that would no longer be the proper math, and you'd have to go back in and change that. So again, this goes back to my don't hardcore things, give things values, and then you can just change them.
And relevant variable names so people know where to look. Well,
exactly.
I changed the size of my item. Where's the item spacing variable that I need to adjust as well to make that line up?
Exactly.
So yeah. And again, when we push left or right, we're just setting the text to shop greeting. And that's actually to hide a side effect of you trying to buy something you can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't afford this. The shopkeeper tells you can't. And then when you move to the left, he greets you. He just goes back to his greeting so that you have it.
That way you don't see you can't afford this on every item, even though it's only the first item you were looking at.
Yeah, if you tried to buy the first item, it was the ritzy one. And then you'd think you couldn't afford any of the others just because you moved left or right and it showed the old message. And we don't want that to happen. So we reset the shop greeting whenever you move left or right.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So that is what happens on enter frame. Now, we don't want it actually to happen 15 times a second. So we actually go and we set a timeout on enter frame so that it only happens every half a second.
Okay.
So it's a little
slowing
bit
slower. It down a little bit.
Yeah, we don't really need it that far. And then down here, just want to point this out again, here's us reusing that code in the proper way. So we use the same show inventory function that we just talked about in the last session. Okay, but now we've given it an offset of 100, so it's moved it down 100 pixels, which lines it up a little bit lower, which works perfectly in our inventory
message.
So it gives
us room for our items and our shopkeeper and our messages.
Which we didn't have in our player status window. Our player status window was just a couple of stats, so it was higher up. So we've reused that exact same function without having to change anything else, and we passed in that parameter knowing we were going to display inventory in another way later on. We gave it a Y offset so we could display it a little bit lower and then have it all line up.
Very cool.
So we reused that.
And then the bottom line, I guess we're just resetting our shop funds every time we do a
We are asking the shop, what are the shop funds, and putting it into the text so that that can be displayed. And I can just pop over to that, and that was just this simple
just
function
simple,
again,
yeah.
Where we just display your gold. It's just getting that message.
So
what are we missing still? Well, we haven't drawn the items that are for sale.
I was going to say, we need to draw these items and actually
have
them show up, right?
So it's similar to it's almost the same as how we drew all of our inventory items.
Okay,
so in this case, it goes draw item for sales. It loops through the items in the game. So in this shop, all of the items in the game are available.
Yes.
That's just the way we wrote it. You might want to change that or randomize what items this shopkeeper has. So you would basically change this to measure the length of that list of items that the shopkeeper should have and a few other things down the line here. But again, other than that, we're still drawing from the same set of images. We're spacing them out same as we did just a second ago. Okay, and then we put our item location for that item there, which image is this guy. That's it. We call it his frame variable, or his frame for the image. And we then add it as a child to the shop so that it will be visible when we add the shop to the game. So we also need to grab the item description for each item. So we're going to create a new label with it that just stores the price value for that item at whichever one we're dealing with in our for loop. Okay, that's our index I. And then put a little line break and add the item's description. So it'll be the price and the description underneath
Just underneath the
Yeah. So we'll have the item on top, then the price, then the description set up. And we've chosen white as our color for the text. And again, you
makes
can customize
this. Makes
sense.
We have a black background.
Yeah, we have black background for the shop, sort of like you're in a dungeon or cave or something. And you can go ahead and customize that to whatever you want. The black just gives it a nice distinction that you are not where you were before. You are suddenly somewhere else.
It separates it nicely. Yeah.
So we add that description now as a child to the shop as well, so that it will appear. So we have both those things set up. And if the item happens to be the selected item, so the, as we're iterating through setting these up to draw, if it was is the current one that you know the player is thinking about grabbing, then we can go ahead and we need to draw that selector. In this case, it's the player underneath that item. So now that we know, oh, this is the item we're dealing with, right under the description and the price, we go ahead and we draw that character. So it's the exact same code that we would use to draw the player. And we're just
moved into this scene.
Yeah, and we're picking the frame where he's facing upwards, so he's looking at the item.
Makes sense.
So again, this would have to change if you wanted some other...
added frames or changed the animation system.
So if you wanted some other sprite and you added it to the end, which is a nice big hand, you could just change this number to match that value, and you would have your little hand pointing up.
Very cool.
Thing.
All right, so I got another question.
Yep.
How do we actually get the input?
So, well, we looked at the attempt to buy input. So when we hit the space bar, okay, that would fire off our attempt to buy. But we didn't look at the buttons because we need the buttons and the D-pad also. That was
That's just keyboard. We want to make it so it's mobile friendly as well.
That's right. We want mobile friendly as well. So down here, here's the rest of the, I might as well show you the greeting and the apology and the sale. There's all our variables being filled in for all that stuff. So we have it set up. Here's our message, which is just a new label that starts out as a greeting. That's the message variable we kept changing its text for to do all these things. And of course, we need to draw the shopkeeper. So now that we've specified how to do all those things up there and what we're using all these for, we can go ahead and draw it. And down here is our shop pad.
Okay.
So I just gave it a different name so it's clear what we're dealing with. So this is our shop D-pad. And again, it comes from Enchant UI. You go ahead and move it to whatever position you want, add it as a child to the shop scene. And then we have a shop B button and a shop A button. I put them all, even though we don't really have functionality for B still, but it's there for whatever functionality
nice,
you choose.
Aesthetic appeal of old Game Boys, as I like to refer to
it. So we move it into position, add it, and then the A button, move it into position, add it. And of course, because we want to deal with touch, the A button is the one that we need touch for. And it's just going to, again, call attempt to buy, just like the spacebar will attempt to buy.
Very cool.
And the last thing, add it to child.
So why don't you fire it up in the emulator and actually show us
okay,
this.
Okay, so we can play around with this. So here we are on our little phone emulator again. And we can walk up. The cat is the guy we want to talk to, but I'm just going to go in behind here, see if we can fake him out. No? No deal? Okay. Nope, no deal. But his name is Maniki, or however you want to pronounce that. And he sells things, and here you go. You can see our items that are up for sale. We got our price, we got the names, or which was all we had for a description. We could have done some other things. There's our goal display, and this guy is our indicator. So when I push left and right and so on, okay, we can move back and forth and we can look at what we want to buy. Obviously, well, you know what? I want a Dragon Pox. I had one earlier and I'm jealous, but sorry, I don't have enough money for that. So there's our message. All right, and then if I move to the right, it doesn't say that, you know, you can't buy this anymore. It just
makes
goes
sense.
Back. I sell things. And I could buy this. But I'm not going to buy it yet. I'm going to walk away. He says, come again. And then pops out after a second.
Very nice.
If you feel that's too short, we just extend that time. Right? So 1,000, done.
That's
so
pretty good for that short of a message.
It is a short. It may be a little fast. I mean, depends on your target audience again, right?
Yeah.
If it's small children, they take a little bit longer to read maybe and so on. Or older people, I don't know. Everybody can take longer, I guess. You could have bad eyesight and you get to squint at your phone. It's glaring out. So maybe you want to, you know what, extend that to 2-3 seconds. But you don't want it too long because you're going to go in and out of shops a lot. So I can buy this chess set. I've got 60.
Okay.
Or it costs 60, sorry, I have 100. So if I buy that, here you go. My gold went down to 40. And
it displays your purchased item.
It displays my purchased item. That's us replaying that show inventory command. So if I did have any other items previously, it would have shown up here. So I knew I already
had. So you wouldn't purchase the same thing twice.
Exactly. So I wouldn't purchase the same thing twice. Now, we didn't show the buy code. So let's go take a look at how that gets pulled off. So attempt to buy is what got called there when I hit that button. So I'm going to go to attempt to buy. And basically, what we do is we just query the shop, because we're inside shop one of shop's functions. Mm-hmm. So we say this, so it knows we're talking about the shop, dot item selected. And that's the index we want from the items array. And then we ask it what its price is. So that's what we store. We get the that item's price. So the one we're currently looking at, that item's price. We check the player's gold value, the gold pieces he's got. If it's less than the item price.
Sorry.
Although, I mean, you don't have enough. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe you want to add thieving into the game later, so you can be like, or I'm a thief, okay? You know, or not a thief, or something like that. So it displays the apology. Otherwise, you either have exactly enough or more than enough, and we go into our else, and we null out the visible items again, just to make sure it's reset. We go ahead and subtract your price from the gold pieces, so you're left with whatever you have, and we now push in the item that was selected from the items array, push its ID in to our inventory. We now have one. So you could buy more than the same one, and it would just push in the same number three times or whatever if you had enough money. And every time the message would pop up with, you know, whatever the sale message is.
Just as a proof of concept, you want to fire up the game, show them you're buying something, and then show them actually having it in your inventory.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I guess we didn't take a look at that. We should see one of those, I know how it was supposed to work, therefore I didn't test it situations, right? So here we are. We're in here, and I'm just going to go this way to show you the wraparound, right? That worked just fine. I purchase it. Okay, I leave the store. He says goodbye. I walk away from him so I don't enter the store again. I push the button, and...
And there it is in our inventory.
We now have it. Now, if I could somehow cheat and give myself some more money, I could buy another one or whatever, and away we go.
Isn't that what the B button's for? Give yourself more money?
More money! Buy, buy, buy! No. So, that's a proof of concept, effectively, for all of those features. That gives us some basic interaction. Okay, we still got one more guy over here.
Yeah, I think he's coming up next.
He's been there a while. That guy's, you know, and he's been looking at me funny.
I'm not gonna lie, he looks a little shady.
I mean, I don't know. I think we should deal with him next. So
sounds good. But first, let's take a quick break.
Oh, fine.
Yeah. Give ourselves a little bit of breather. I know you're excited to get into the battle system, but we'll come back after 10 minutes and we'll dig right into the battle system.
Sounds good.